Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. Well, it's the third Monday of the month again, and that means that on Conversations Live, we focus on career and business pathing, and we take a look at how people create unique work lifestyles that set them on fire. If you ask me how I describe success, I say it's living life on your terms. And today we're talking to two very different people who made a commitment to do just that and who learned to trust the journey. Both of my guests followed very different paths, both created their own unique work lifestyle plans, and both are making a big difference to others while living life on their terms. In our second segment, we'll talk with Mark Tomback. He wrote a book originally for teenagers, but ultimately found his audience had no age limit. Tomback will share his life-changing experiences and how he trusted his journey to help others find themselves. That's coming up around 12:40 today. But first, I'm pleased to welcome Tamma Keeves, an honors graduate of Harvard Law School. She left her practice with a large corporate law firm to pursue a writing career and to embolden others to live meaningful lives of self-expression. Keeves is now a best-selling author, a dynamic speaker, and career coach. And as the founder of Awakening Artistry, she's helped thousands of people realize their own creative dreams. She's presented workshops at the Amiga Institute and Canyon Ranch, amongst many others. She's also a national presenter for A Course in Miracles. Her new book is called This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love. Tamma Keeves, welcome.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, I was having a conversation with a friend who left Seattle. She moved back to Florida last year, and she called me. She said, Vicki, I've found somebody that I think is wonderful, and I think she'd be a great guest on your show. So I checked you out. She sent me some information, and here you are today.
And that's how it always works.
Yeah. So you say in this book, well, first of all, let's talk about the title of this book, This Time I Dance. I love the title. How did you come up with that?
Oh, thank you. You know, I think it was because in my career life, I felt so restricted and I felt so unempowered and I felt so measured in everything. And there was that part of me that just wanted to dance in life, you know, and to really be free and liberated and do what I came here to do. And so I was actually writing in my journal one day, and I kind of was giving up on myself. And I was saying, you know, I kind of blew it in my career. I kind of blew it with the choice I made. Maybe next lifetime I'll do it right or whatever, you know. And something just in my journal, I just kept writing, no, this time I dance. So that's how I came up with it.
And you say that you start out the book by with the question that became an answer. You told a good friend, you're sipping mint tea with a good friend, and you say, I'm thinking of walking out of the most well-paid job of my life, and I'm not sure that doing what I love, whatever the heck that is, will pay the bills. And he said to you, if you're this successful doing work you don't love, finish that off for us.
He said, if you're this successful doing work you don't love, what could you do with work you do love? And that just blew my head off, you know? I mean, that question really made me think, oh my God, I've worked so hard. I've been killing myself at something I don't even love, that doesn't even inspire me, as many of us are doing. Many of us are doing that every single day. And then I started thinking about what would happen if we followed what inspired us? What would happen if we stopped fighting ourselves and started fighting for ourselves and really listening to what we wanted to do? So I love that question. If you're this successful doing work you don't love, what could you do with work you do love?
And, you know, now people might say, well, now's not a good time to do that. But I think it's as good as any, because
I don't only think it's as good as any. I think it's the best time. I think that's what these times are for. I think all the traditional security is falling away, the established institutions are falling away, and I think more and more of us are really having to look at what the heck do I want to do, And what people don't realize is that your inspiration and following your heart and following your dreams, that's not a weak path. It's not a dangerous path. To me, it's a path of strength, because what you're inspired to do, what you love to do, that's where you're going to have more energy, more natural faculties, more natural resources, you know, the energy to be competitive in this world, and the energy to have ideas to create a job or to create a livelihood that may not even exist yet, may not even be in the want ads yet. So I really think that I always say that, you know, in uncertain times, it's the best time to follow your passion.
I would agree. And I think, you know, the more creative you can get in that thinking, that the more chance you have of making a mm-hmm. real difference in your life. The book is, you know, often we see, you know, 7 steps to success or five steps to create this, that, or the other. This is more a journey. It's your journey with stories along the way that you, and you said you were more concerned about sharing the journey than just the map. Tell us a little bit about the book itself.
Well, because you just nailed it. I was so frustrated. You know, I'm a reasonably intelligent person, and I would read all these self-help books of 5 steps to your new life, 30 days to your new life, and, you know, it'd be 80 damn days later, I'd have the same life, and I feel like, what is wrong with me? I'm failing self-help, you know? And I remember being really frustrated because so many of the books made it sound so simple, and I thought, you know, if it's so simple, why aren't more of us doing this? So I really, really wanted to write something about being in that transition, when you're inspired and you're excited and then you're scared out of your mind and then you're freaking out and then you doubt everything. How do you continue? How do you stay inspired? What are the choices you need to make? And so I know for myself, I always say that I wrote the book that I wanted to read. I wanted to watch someone else go through this and hit the wall and talk to their mother, you know, and see what they did, you know. And so I wrote that book, and that's why it's been so successful. That's why, I mean, I've gotten, you know, emails from all over the world of people telling me, oh, my God, for the first time, I don't feel like I'm crazy. For the first time, I feel like maybe I really could do this. And I think it's because I shared that personal aspect.
Yeah, I think, I know from my experiences, I've learned so much from, you know, other people's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they're 10 years into their journey and they can tell you, hey, don't do this, but do that,
mm-hmm.
You definitely can save some time there.
It's that, and it's also their thinking, you know, because I have so many people tell me, oh, my God, you know, I thought I was the only person who thought like that, or, mm-hmm. you know, or I thought I was the only person who got stuck with that. And so I think it empowers people to realize, these are normal, and this is the journey. Every creative person, every entrepreneurial person, every person who's trying to find their own power, their own passion, goes through this process. And to me, it's even more about what we think and what we believe than anything about what we do.
Now, you're in this, you're a Harvard lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You are in this big corporate law firm. To all intents and purposes, you know, a very enviable position for many people. What kind of things were going through your mind right before you quit? Because you weren't forced out. You made mm-hmm. made your own choice here. What were the last-minute panic things that went through your mind?
You know, one of the things that happened was I'd always been very successful by willpowering my way. Like, even if I hated it or I was miserable, I could willpower my way through it. And part of what was happening was I was so miserable that I was starting to lose my focus, and I was starting to lose, you know, being excellent at it. And I thought, you know, this is serious. And what really happened was I really was just depressed because I wasn't doing what I came here to do. I kept having that haunted feeling that there's something else. And I really started feeling like I didn't want to live anymore. And I decided, okay, I've got to get out of this job. I'm going to take a vacation. And I went to California because that's where everybody goes to find themselves.
Right. With all the lost souls.
So cliche, but I did it. And I sat on this beach, and this was really like the last moments. I sat on this beach, and I was eating this bagel, and I'm looking at the waves. And for the first time in an entire year, I realized, you know what? In this moment, I'm actually happy. And then I started realizing, you know what? This bagel cost 50 cents at the time. The ocean's free. And I started thinking, you know, maybe I don't need a gazillion dollars a year to be okay, to be happy. And that was the moment. It was one of those moments where I knew that I knew. And it was horrible because I didn't want to know, you know. But I knew that I knew in that moment that, oh, my God, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, well, because with that knowing comes some responsibility.
Yes.
Either way, you make a choice to stay and you know,
yes,
suffer or the big upheaval. I actually lived in California. I had to go to Oregon to find myself.
Whenever I lecture in California, that's what I always ask them. I'm always like, where do you people go? What is your excuse? We all come here.
So you quit your job, and what's the next stage for you? You took some time off. There's a chapter in your book that I want to get to. It's called You Have to Take an Intermission to Find Your Mission. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such a valuable segment in the book.
Well, it's just that, you know, everybody wants to immediately, like, you know, jump into, okay, my next killer career, and what is it? And for most of us, I think we do need a little bit of a time out to really start healing and undoing and really start feeling out, what do I want? What do I really want? Because I thought, you know, I chose this first career out of what I thought I was supposed to do and what everybody else told me what to do. I didn't want to just do a knee-jerk reaction and find some other job right away, and I wanted to take some time. And I actually got a job waiting tables. I actually downsized my expenses, and I wanted to do it for fun because I'd never done something like that. I'd always been like, you know, straight through school, straight through education, straight through, you know, into the law firm, straight through, you know, being on partnership track. And so, and I grew up in a Jewish family, so every week all I'd hear from my mother was, you're serving nachos now. With a Harvard law degree, you're serving nachos. So that was my intermission.
That's too funny. I actually, I'd been a professional all my life, and I ended up, I worked in a home for people with mental issues.
Wow.
And so I was cleaning toilets and emptying spit jars.
Oh, you
jars.
Did me one better.
Yes, emptying spit jars, because I wanted to work on this documentary film and I didn't get paid for 5 weeks. So.
Exactly. And you know, and that's what I finally realized was, I finally realized that I wanted to take the time. I knew that I wanted to write. I mean, I'd always had that dream. And I just wanted to take the time to start developing it and becoming excellent and finding out what I wanted to write and dabble and create. And so I wanted to create some kind of lifestyle where, you know, I call it in my book a dropout job, where it's not your real job, it's not your ultimate passion. It's just something that's going to pay some bills meanwhile that won't distract you from your ultimate passion. And it's hard because, you know, our egos are involved. You know, my ego would be like, oh my God, you have all this education and you're, you know, picking up someone's tray, you know?
Right,
But for me, though, it was such an act of courage to say, but I know what I really am. I know I have this dream, and I'm being courageous enough to give my life to it. That's what I'm really doing. And I'm doing all these other things to support it meanwhile.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. I'm talking today with Tama Keeves. She's an author, she's a speaker, and a coach. Her new book is called This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun. Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Good news, Belgium. We're streamed worldwide at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Music is just starting, night is calling, and I am falling, dance with me.
And welcome back, welcome back. That's perfect music, Eric, thank you. The book we're talking about today is This Time I Dance, but we're talking about much more than the book. We're talking with Tamma Keeves, and as I said, she's a writer, she's a speaker, she's a coach, and we're talking about her transition, her journey, and how we can learn from other people's journeys today. And we were talking before the break about, you know, jobs that we took to take us through that interim period. When we make a career change, you say in the book, it's never a step down to step ahead. And intellectually, we might know that, okay, this is necessary for us to get to the next level. This is necessary. You know, in my case, I mean, I nearly vomited every time I had to empty a spit jar, let me tell you. But, or even clean a toilet for that. It's like I'd go in with, like, you know, Mac Hazard gear on. But
you know, we are so not selling people on doing their dreams here.
No, because the beauty was I got to make a documentary film during the week, and I just had this weekend gig to pay my rent. So it's part of the journey, and it's part of the fun, and you have all these great stories to tell afterwards.
Yes.
But let's talk about how you overcome those feelings of, in your case, you said poverty, discomfort, humiliation, loss, fear.
Well, certainly. I mean, I would get my Harvard alumni magazines, and, you know, my colleagues now owned their estates and their third homes, and, you know, and I'm waiting tables at the time to support myself. But, you know, again, I kept focusing on the courage that it took and the passion that it took. And for people who are listening and thinking, oh, my God, I could never do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm too old for that. First of all, there's a million ways to do this. I work with so many different clients who do it a completely different way. I took an extreme path. Sounds like you took an extreme path. I have clients who are building what they love on the side, who are still in their jobs and building what they love on the side. I have clients who do contract work in their old field and are building it. So there's a million ways to do this, so I want people to know that. But the other thing is, you know, I can tell you the funny stories of, oh, my God, I'm waiting tables, and, you know, and I waited the table on a senior partner, you know, from my law firm. But really, you know, and truly, I was so happy. I had been so unhappy as a lawyer. I had felt so this ache and this desperation and this fear that my life was passing me by, that there was something else I was here for. And in finally claiming the life of becoming a writer, or at least for me, saying, you get one chance in life, I want to know where this goes. You know, even if I fail, which was my biggest fear, even if I fail, at least I will know in my lifetime that, hey, I tried it. I gave it something. And so even though some of the aspects were challenging, I was so happy and I was so at peace because I knew I'm doing the right thing with my life, and I was getting to write, and I was free. And I, you know, when Monday morning came, I didn't, you know, I didn't have the feeling of that dread and that fear that, oh my God, I have to go into a place I hate. And one of the things I guess I want people to know is that when you start doing something you love or something you care about, it gives you so much energy, and it makes everything okay. It's like raising your child, you know, of that you go through all this trauma or difficulty, but it's so meaningful and it's so magical that everything's worth it. So I think it's the same thing.
There's a great line in the book. You say, I didn't want to linger in the corporate world just to prop myself up while I dragged my soul down. At last, I valued self-respect more than self-importance.
Yeah, that's a good author. She's good. I always love when people read it back to me. It's always like, yeah, damn, that is good.
So let's talk about learning to trust ourselves, because you do say you did not have a great deal of support from family.
That's the understatement of the year. Yes. I get those phone calls of, yeah, do you even know what Susan Finkenberg is making? Do you know who she married? And it's like, no, Ma, I need to know this. Like, that's the support I got for living my dreams.
Well, you know, how did you, that you say critics only rattle critics only rattle the rattled, and there's a lot of truth in that, because I remember my hackles would flare a little sometimes when people would go, well, what's happened? I was a student. I mean, I chose to be a student for the first year I made my transition.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you're not going to be making millions of dollars, but it very quickly fell into place for me. How did you handle those critics?
I think it really is finally starting to recognize that, first of all, my problem is not with them. It's with me, you know? I mean, the reason my mother flipped me out was because I was scared, you know? And so, like, the whole time I'm trying to convince her that I'm right and I'm doing the right thing and whatever, and I really needed to be convincing me. And so one of the things, you know, I have another chapter in the book where I say something like, you know, sometimes you have to leave home to come home. And I painfully had to realize that when you're in a journey of transition and a journey of inspiration, that sometimes you need to find new people on this path. And sometimes your old friends or your family, they may even mean very, very well, don't know how to support you. They're afraid for you. They don't know the love you're feeling. They don't know the passion you're feeling. They don't have access to that inner knowing sense that you do. And so for me, I had to start limiting my contact, you know, with the people who were asking me questions that I didn't have answers for yet. So I started having to limit my contact, and I really started having to find people who could support me now. And so, you know, I'm always a big believer on join a support group, take a class. If you can't find new people to support you on your journey, then hire someone. Hire a coach or a therapist or talk to your minister or, you know, someone who supports the dream in you, because we are out there. And by the way, it's usually people who are living their dreams that want to support yours.
That is so true. I find that to be so true.
And by the way, the other thing I always teach my clients is I never take advice from unhappy people.
Yeah. And sometimes we have to learn that, right?
And to stop arguing. Every time you're arguing with them, you're wasting such precious time. You could be talking to someone who's building your dreams.
Yes, absolutely. You say in the book, I'm quoting directly here, I think we experience a form of higher powered paralysis to protect us from getting in our own clever way. You're talking about a period after you left, after you made the transition, and you kind of went into a little slump there, like, what now? Which is very natural for some people to go through. So talk a little bit about that and how you got through that period.
That is from the chapter called The Year of Sleeping Dangerously, which was the slump. And again, you know, I was some high-powered overachiever, and I thought I was just going to run out there and now go achieve my bliss, you know? And it's very, very common for many of us to hit, you know, like to start transitioning. And then what happens is, you know, we live in a culture where it's all about doing, doing, doing. And I really think that this path is about undoing. And when I say undoing, I mean it's about undoing the old beliefs in you that don't work, undoing the fears, undoing all the choices that we made. And so for me, I was tired. And I had abused myself for so long. And it was very sad to realize that, oh my God, I didn't listen to myself. And so some of what I hit was that. And so I very much do not encourage people to just charge out there, because I don't want them just going from something from their head. I really, really want this coming from the deeper sense of you, the soul of you, what you have to do. And for some of us, particularly I think in our Western culture, I think we need to slow down. I think we really need to slow down and feel through everything and take some time to journal and take some time to walk and take some time to talk to new people and get new ideas. And then I promise you something amazing is going to emerge from that.
Now, did you set a timeline for yourself, Tama? Did you say, okay, if I have not found my purpose, if I have not, you know, achieved ABC by such and such a date?
That's a great question. That's a great question. It's something I do with all my clients, actually, because I bargained with myself exactly like that. When I left law, I did not say, or did I know that, okay, that's it, I'm leaving forever. I couldn't have said that. I just couldn't have done that emotionally. And so I did that. I bargained with myself. I said, you know what? I'm going to take 6 months out of my life to just experience who the heck I am and what I want now. And if this, you know, all these self-help books, if there's any validity in it, I'm going to try some of this follow your bliss stuff, you know? And I gave myself 6 months, and then I said I'd reevaluate, and then 6 months turned into a year, and then a year turned into many, many, many years. So I kept renegotiating, and I always do that, actually, when I'm trying, you know, because I work a lot with people on trusting your inner voice or trusting an inspired way, which is not a linear way. It's not an A to B to C to D path. And so I set that up a lot, like, let's try it for a period of time, whatever it is. Maybe it's 3 days, just to have the experience of if this works for you, because the experience will give you the faith. The experience will give you the trust. None of us have trust initially.
Yeah. Now, there's a chapter in here I love as well called Master Approving Instead of Improving. Talk to me a little bit about that, because you actually found a writer's group. You use that as an example in the book.
Yeah, you know, so much of this path for me has been about learning how to champion myself, how to believe in myself, how to advocate myself. And many of us are so into self-improvement and I've got to get better and, you know, and we're so ambitious with it. And that writing group, for instance, you know, I'd be in a critique group and they would, you know, be critiquing this or that. And so the next day I'd be like, oh my God, I got to master semicolons. You know, this person likes adjectives. So then there'd be adjectives. And what I really needed to learn was how to listen to my voice. And here's the deal. If you do more of what you love, if you do more of it and more of it and more of it and more of it, you're going to get better and better and better and better. But you're not going to do more of it if you're constantly trying to improve and stop yourself and judge yourself. And so I'm a big believer on keep approving and approving, saying, yeah, that's great, keep going, that's great, keep going, because the more you do it, you're going to get better and better and better, and then you will improve.
Yes, and, you know, going back to my old management days, I always remembered when I was going through phases and somebody would go, well, I don't like this or whatever, I would remember that mantra, you know, if you try to please everyone, you are certain to fail.
That's great, and it's so true.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have no semicolons in my book now.
There you go. Now, one of the things that I know scares many people is they want all of the how. They want the action plan laid out in full force before they take one step.
Yes.
There's a saying I like that sometimes you have to jump off a cliff and build your wings on the way down. You say focus more on the what you want. So talk a little about that.
You know, one of the things I always teach my clients is that you can't plan an inspired life. You're not going to plan an inspired life. If it's really inspired and creative and alive, you can't plan that. It's not, again, it's not this linear process, which I think for most of us is very scary. But there is one thing you can do right now, something that's speaking to you that will lead to the next thing. And that next thing will lead to the next thing. And that next thing will lead to the next thing. So what I always tell people, you know, when you're starting on this journey, is to really find your fire, not your map. You know, everybody's looking for the map. How am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? You're never going to see the hell. But if you get in touch with the fire, what you really want, what you really desire, and you keep building that, that's what's going to do it. And I'll just tell you briefly, you know, I don't know if you know, but it took me 12 years to write this book.
I had no idea
it would take that long. But I was, again, following that fire. And originally, I self-published it. I, you know, didn't have an agent. I didn't have a contract. I didn't have a publisher. But again, I just was following that fire. And then it got discovered by a major publisher. The publisher, somebody wrote to me, and she was a vice president of marketing and publicity for Random House. And she said, this is the best book I've ever read on finding your calling. And she got it to the publisher I'd always dreamed of, the president of the company. They, you know, published the book exactly the way it was, the words, the title, everything. And so, you know, I always tell people, how can you plan that? How can you make that happen? But I would never have allowed that to happen if I wasn't following that fire, if I was just looking for the step-by-step process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love this at the end of the book. You say that your experiences that you talk about in the book of finding, befriending, and trusting myself have become more precious to me than any particular writing or lecturing that I do. I'm proud of what I've done, but I'm even more enthralled by who I've become. So how have you changed as a person?
You know, I'm spouting off to you about inspiration and approving of yourself and all these juicy, beautiful things. This was not who I was. You know, I was cynical, skeptical, crazy, ambitious, and very much, I'm sad to say, very much not on my own side. You know, very much self-critical, very much not believing of myself. I think for me the biggest thing that I have gotten out of following a dream and why I feel so passionate about helping other people do that is for the first time in my life, I am finally learning how to trust my own instincts and my own dreams and my own beliefs and impulses and to side with that. And it's been an amazing thing. And, you know, people have asked me, you know, you have a great story, you know, you believed in this book and you self-published it and then it got picked up by the major publisher, but, you know, what if that had never happened? You know, what if it failed, which is, you know, is a possibility. And for me, by the time I finished writing that book and put it into the world, you know, even through self-publishing, it was the greatest act of self-love, the greatest act of self-respect, even if nothing had ever happened. I mean, on a human level, it would have been a drag. I would have been disappointed. But on another level, I was really proud of myself that, you know what, in my lifetime, I supported and believed in myself enough to follow it, enough to give myself this chance and to see what would happen.
Yeah. If you were setting out now, what do you know now that you didn't know when you were setting out? What's the one thing that you wish you'd known then that would have maybe made your journey quicker, smoother, easier?
That's a great question.
Million dollar question.
I think I knew it on an intuitive level that this would work, that we're meant to do this, that we're meant to do what we're inspired to do, that we're meant to do it. But I didn't believe it. I didn't take it all the way in. I think I worried so much, and I was scared so much, and I still am. I mean, at this level, at the next level of it, I'm still working with the same kinds of things. I wish that I would have taken it in deeper and just known it to be true all the way and not spent as much time doubting and struggling with it. I think that would be the main thing.
Well, Tamak Heaves, you certainly are an inspiration. I'm 11 years into my journey and I still got inspired by your book. So
Oh, wonderful. We
can take it anytime. The book is called This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love by Tama J. Keeves. Tama, give us your website, would you?
It's thistimeidance.com. And I love listeners to go out there and visit us because we have all kinds of free resources and you can even download. I did a special report on finding your calling, like three of the things that you absolutely need to know because I'm a career coach and it comes up over and over and over. So I just wanted some people to have this. So if you go to thistimeidance.com, you can download that. I also have online courses, like it's $8 a week and you can get different assignments from my coaching practice. There's all kinds of good stuff out there. thistimeidance.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inspiring so many people and for following your dreams. Thank you.
And again, my guest, Tama Keeves, This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love is her book. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Mark Tomback. His book is called Spiriting Around.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
This is Martha Norwalk, every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m. Thanks in part to Designing Health, makers of Missing Link, we cover the world of animals. This week, June 21st, it's a bioenergetic synchronization technique Sunday with Dr. Nels Rasmussen. We'll have open phone lines. Dr. Nels can help with emotional, behavioral, or physical problems, and he can test for allergies, drug or supplement compatibility, and dosages for you or your animal friends. Call us for your free remote session, Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk. AM 1150.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Made fresh each day for you. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My first guest was Tama Keeves, This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love was her book. And I'm talking now with Mark Tombach. He's been studying spirituality for more than 35 years. He's been looking for the common thread that ties spiritual paths together. He says that we make life much harder than it needs to be and is here to share his journey. He's the author of Spiriting Around, A Modern Guide to Finding Yourself. Mark, welcome.
Thank you very much, Vicki. It's nice to be with you.
And I should say, I noticed on your book, it says Martin Mark Tombach, but you go by Mark, right?
I go by Mark. Martin's my given name. Martin's my legal name, but everyone for the last 20 years has called me Mark. It's kind of like a nickname.
Yeah. Well, we're talking today about living life on your terms. My first guest certainly has done that, and Mark, you have done that too. I want to just start by sharing some of your journey, and then we'll talk a little bit about the book.
Sure.
And as a young man, you got caught up in drugs, which was pretty prevalent, I guess, in the area you were at the time you were younger.
I'm an old hippie, yes.
An old hippie. But you say that added to your confusion of the world and led you close to mental illness. Tell us what kind of experiences you were having then, and how you turned that around, how it led to doing the work that you're doing now.
Sure. Well, frankly, I had a miserable life in my early years. Starting when I was about 14, 15 years old, I went to a series of psychiatrists and psychologists, and finally when I was 20, I wound up in a mental hospital for a couple of months. And when I got out of the hospital, I made a commitment to healing myself. I didn't accept being miserable. I felt powerless. I didn't have much control over. You know, it wasn't a switch I could just turn on and I'd be clear thinking. But I made this commitment, and for the next 20 years I was dynamic. I was dedicated to healing myself. And you know, when you focus on something passionately for a long time, you learn a lot about it. So as I inquired, as I looked at every thought I had and thought about all the negative thoughts I had and how to replace them with positive thoughts and bring positive relationships into my life, I exposed my spiritual side. It's an interesting thing. The more introspective you are, the more your awareness of your spirituality comes to the front. So you see your responsibilities as a human being in a social environment, but you also have this sense of your spirituality and that you have a relationship to God and to the spiritual nature of the other human beings you meet, and that the connecting force is love.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people have a difficult experience.
You say that the conclusions you came to about spirituality after you'd done all your research and, you know, after many years of studying, is that spirit is our birthright, no matter how we interpret God. And at the center of every spiritual path is a desire to know more about ourselves and our responsibilities to life. And you believe that's really the key to making life easier for ourselves, correct?
I really do, Vicki. It's... every religion has as its main focus how to define love. What's the meaning of love, and what's the meaning of right behavior? How should we relate to ourselves, have an opinion of ourselves? How do we relate to God, and how do we relate to our fellow human beings? And it's this behavior. People are always trying to say, what should I do, and what's the right action, what's the right intention? And I think the most important thing is not so much the action, not so much the practice, but it's this desire, it's this intention to love one another. And as we live the life and we try to express these feelings, I think that when we love each other is the factor, and it's not so important what the behavior is. I think anyone would agree that love will lead you to right behavior. And the question is, if right behavior will lead you to love, I think is it can. But I don't think it's the actual practice that's important. It's the intention. It's the sincerity and the desire to be a loving human being, to love yourself, to love the people you share the experience with, and to love God, to create a relationship, this partnership with God, where you gain God's wisdom and God's influence, and you get that. It all comes from love. It all comes from a consciousness and a desire to express this consciousness in everything you do. And all your desires to bring love into your life, then you will include God in your life.
Okay, and God can mean many different forms to many different people. Sure. I want to ask you about adversity, but let's take a quick break so I don't have to interrupt you, and we'll talk about that when we come back. I'm talking right now with Mark Tombach. His book is called Spiriting Around, A Modern Guide to Finding Yourself.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Clear, clean, and crisp. Check us out in digital quality sound on FM 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and we're in our last segment today. My guest is Mark Tombach. He's been studying spirituality for more than 35 years, had a very difficult life in his younger days, and used a lot of spiritual study and New Age study to turn things around for himself, and now he's helping hundreds of other people turn their lives around. This book, actually, that you wrote, you originally wrote this for teenagers, but then you found there really was no age limit to it. But I noticed that you do work a lot with teenagers, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about spiritual responsibility, and responsibility is very important to learn at a young age. And responsibility is basically the control that you have over yourself. And I think a lot of people look at teenagers as old children, but they're really not. They're really new adults, because they have all the responsibilities that adults have into their 30s and 40s, 50s, 80s, and that's creating resources. They have to create financial resources. They have to learn to create social resources, and this is why it was targeted to young adults as a guidebook, for growing up, and that's why it also crosses over, and it could help anyone at any stage of life, because everyone has a few blanks to fill in. Everyone can use a new angle.
Sure. I want to talk about adversity.
Yes.
My mother always used to tell me when things went bad in my life, adversity strengthens the character. And, you know, I just want to say, well, blow it out your ear because it's not helping me right now. But I do know that to be true. And you believe that the purpose of hardship is to make us stronger. It's to prove to ourselves that we are infinitely greater than any challenge. I wonder if you'd talk a little about that, Mark.
Sure. Basically, life is a spiritual event. It's not meant to defeat us, as difficult it is, and I really believe it's too hard. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I just wanted to make life a little bit easier, but because there are avoidable problems that if people are aware of, they can make another decision, and there are opportunities, especially with young people. They don't realize that if they make a slightly different choice, they'll open up a new world with more advantages to them. Life's not supposed to defeat us. It's an environment where we test our inhibitions, where we test our doubts, where we engage our spirit to deal with the problems, the things we hate, the frustrations we have. Because as we go on, what happens 10 years down the road? It's a joke. Do you remember the problem we had and how we worked it out? Oh, my father was so mad. Oh, my boss almost killed me. But you look back with a little bit of a sense of humor at these things as you grow through them. When they're happening, they're awful. And sometimes, frankly, they're awful enough to bring problems into your future. But life is the environment for our souls, for our spiritual selves, to ask questions. It's really a big question machine. If you think about what you do all day long, it's all you do is ask questions. You'll be asking questions before you go to sleep tonight. You'll wake up with questions on your mind every day for the rest of your life. You're going to be asking questions. This is the human creative process. We ask questions. This is really how God explores the universe and experiences is through human beings asking questions all the time. So we have this support that really shouldn't be ignored. And if people don't believe in God, people don't trust in God, the only thing I say is I ask people, try it out, test it, make love prove itself. You know, anything in life you want to, if you're going to believe in it, you want it to be reliable. So I just would ask people, you know, test love, use love in your decisions, use love in analyzing your plans, and see if it'll prove itself, see if it'll be reliable. And this is the way you involve God and God's wisdom, and you can access this. It's important to know that you're not hanging off a cliff by your fingers. You're not all alone in this process. We are spiritual beings. We are connected to each other. We are connected to a great universe. And I don't want to get too metaphysical here, but the practical events in your life, your practical needs, you can take this love and apply it to your practical needs. It's important to apply it to your everyday events. God and love, it's not only important for seeing yourself as part of the universe, it's also about making decisions in paying your bills and how to respond to certain relationships. You want to have mutual respect. You want to respect yourself. You want to build a life for yourself you can respect, and you want to be responsible to yourself in the way that you love other people. So it's a giant equation. Love is the common denominator. Life is not easy. I want it to be easier for people. And I think love and there are many religions, you know, they all. Everybody loves their kids, no matter where you are. If you're in the jungles of New Guinea, if you're in a high rise in New York City, you love your kids. Mm. And it's this relationship, it's this love inside people which connects us. And it's a sense of responsibility, and it can be explored. It's very rarely explored. You know, we have romantic love is thrown around, and we see movies and listen to music, and it inspires that feeling in us. So we look out over the ocean or over the mountains. I'm asking people, explore that field. Next time it comes up, take a step back from the pleasure you find in it and start thinking about it, or start feeling it. There's a passage in the Bible, I think it's 1 Corinthians 13. Love is long-suffering and kind and keeps no score of wrongs. It's a great place to start your understanding about love. And the beauty is, if you look at different Bibles, they have slightly different interpretations of the passage.
They do. And I wanted to talk about boundaries, Mark. You talk in the book about boundaries, say when boundaries are crossed or even perceived to be crossed, that conflicts occur. And I know for many women, setting boundaries, it is a difficult thing. They have to learn how to set boundaries. Is that true for men too?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a human instinct where boundaries are, and a lot has to do with personality types. If you know, we live in a social experience. Some people are very aggressive; they may want to ride their motorcycles as loud as they can, and other people are studious and want to study. So the same thing with any you know, and there is a male female dynamic. There's a female female and a male male dynamic. There's economic boss employee dynamics. So there's many, many relationships that each of us have to deal with, and we have to, what's most important is we have to dignify ourselves. Even though we don't express it outwardly all the time, we have a sense of how we feel we should be respected. This is innate. No one can tell you what it should be. You feel it. I mean, it can be identified and explained and expressed in relationship terms as you think about it. But you have an innate feeling of this, this dignity, this personal dignity of what you will accept and what you won't accept. And the boundaries, how much time you want to spend with friends, or if you want a little quiet time by yourself, or even in the house, I need to be alone for 5 minutes. You know, leave me alone. And that's another boundary. The family dynamic, where you have young children who have needs, and you have the husband or wife who have business needs, or you have religious responsibilities or community responsibilities, and it's the mutual respect that you have to be conscious of. And, you know, there's a sense that people have this. But then, when all the pressures of life surround you and press in on you, how do you make a right choice when you're feeling sick, you're feeling tired, you're feeling overwhelmed at work or at home? So it's a tough deal. This is what life is. This is how life tests us. So, you know, it's a good idea when people are calm and relax to consider these things, not in a judgmental way as you did this for 5 minutes, I should get this for 5 minutes. You spent $100 on yourself, I should get $100 for myself. Everybody has their own personal needs. Everyone has to decide for themselves.
And I think you just hit the nail on the head. For me, then, it's think about these things when you're calm, not in the heat of the moment. It's when you're calm, you know, what is acceptable. And also, you said earlier, you know, it's that innate feeling, and there's an intrinsic feeling there that sometimes people have gone over that invisible line in the sand, and we just need to listen to ourselves, don't we?
Really, and you can't always share it with friends and family. They don't always understand it, you
right,
know?
Right. They,
you have to have this sense of dignity that in the sanctuary of your own heart, in the sanctuary of your own thoughts, you must dignify. Even if you have to take actions which you don't like, you have to have a sense of your spiritual self, of this dignified, holy part of yourself, that when the opportunity presents itself, you will change in a physical way. But as you honor that dignity in yourself, the spiritual part of you is successful.
We are at the end of our show, unfortunately. So 30 seconds, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Thanks a lot. I just to have faith in your prayers, to be sincere in your prayers. Thanks for giving me a chance to say this. Praying and prayers are very important, but it's very essential to consider that, like faith is small as a mustard seed.
Okay, we have to go, Mark. I'm sorry. Let me just get your website from you, and so listeners can go check out your website.
Spiritingaround.com. S-P-I-R-I-T-I-N-G-A-R-O-U-N. D.com, and I think people enjoy coming and visiting. There's some fun stuff there.
Okay, thank you so much. His book is actually written under the name of Martin Mark Tombach. It's called Spiriting Around, and that's the name of his website also. It's a modern guide to finding yourself. And I know he's doing great work with teenagers out there, trying to help them identify who they are before they get into trouble. And I want to thank each of you for joining us today. Questions or feedback on today's show, comments, you can reach me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. If you want to just leave a voicemail, you can do that at 206-414-6159. If you do that and want to call back, please remember to leave your number. Otherwise, I can't get in touch with you. Live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us today.